Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, March 13th. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today, and Dr. Ron Scharf of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna is in the studio this afternoon to answer your questions about your feline and canine companions. Pets and Vets show, always popular, always best to call early to ensure your spot in line. Number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us if you want, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Canines, felines, Dr. Ron Scharf, your calls on Pets and Vets coming up right after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today, and here to take your calls is Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Dr. Scharf is a 1985 grad of the Veterinary College at Cornell and has extensive background. He goes way back, hundreds of years. Dr. Ron Scharf, welcome back to the show.
Thanks a lot, Ray. It's great to be here as usual.
Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Try to get in early if you can. We always end up with more calls than we have time. So if you want to get in now, 800-348-2551. Now, very interesting, Ron. We actually got an email for this show yesterday. And so I thought it's a rather long email. Generally, when you send an email to the show, and you can do that as well at voxpopwamc.org, you try to keep it brief, detailed, but brief. That's the way we like to go. This is a rather long email, but it's an interesting story and kind of a sad one. This one is from Mia, and she sent this yesterday. Rebecca writes, I'm writing because I recently adopted a dog who has been through the ringer. The shelter believes she was burned with chemicals when she was a pup, and because of that, she has some nerve scarring some severe scarring all over her body. The reason I'm writing in now, however, is because last week while I was at work, my roommate took Mia, the dog, for a walk in the afternoon. While on the walk, Mia somehow became unleashed and she ran into traffic. By the grace of God, she survived with only a few bumps and bruises. We brought her immediately to the vet to confirm. While I'm extremely grateful she is physically okay, we are now dealing with the aftermath emotionally. She won't walk on sidewalks where there are cars driving. She puts her tail between her legs and either won't walk or turns to walk back inside. I don't want to force her to do anything that she doesn't feel comfortable doing, but I also don't want to cater to her fears. We live in Boston, so it is hard to find places to walk without traffic. This past weekend, I brought her out to my parents in Western Massachusetts, where it's much quieter. We practiced walking on back roads, where maybe 3 cars passed in total. When the cars passed, she would do her usual tail between legs and shake. I tried to just hug her and tell her she's a good girl, and this maybe only helped me. Any advice as to how to move forward in the healthiest way possible for Mia? And that is from Rebecca.
Well, that is a sad story. I do have an answer for it, though. And what the answer entails is some behavior modification, which what the psychologists call canine conditioning and desensitization. The canine conditioning basically is teaching the dog a new behavior for her repertoire. That behavior can be called settle. A lot of people use that term. It can be called whatever you want. But basically, you're teaching the dog that all good things happen when she is settled and relaxing. That means you shouldn't give, the next advice often, almost daily, to my new clients, that I like to not give a dog anything they like or want or appreciate without them having earned it, without them having done something in return. And that way, they know that their behavior can cause all good things to happen and that bad behavior gets them no good things. Now, no good things means, for instance, no attention. So no attention means that if a dog has a behavior that you don't want and you give them a lot of attention, you're kind of fostering or amplifying, reinforcing that behavior that you want to avoid. So it's a natural human inclination to comfort a dog when they are feeling stressed or fearful, and they're shaking and they're worried, and we want to hug them, we want to fill them with love, but inadvertently we may be reinforcing that behavior that we want to get rid of.
Mm.
So you have to overcome this maternal type human desire to make a dog feel good, but you want to replace it with another behavior that they could do that would get them all that good stuff. So the can of conditioning, the teaching the dog to settle, is when nothing's happening to make them nervous. And then what you do is you find a time when they are just a tiny bit away from totally relaxed, and then you say the word settle. You've been doing it for a few weeks anyway when they are settled, but they don't know why you're giving them good stuff.
Yeah.
Then you try to find a moment when they're just the tiniest bit not totally settled. You say settle, and if they relax, and you know your dog, so you know what's going to make them look relaxed. The ears are not going to be back. The ears are not going to be forward. The pupils aren't going to be dilated and wide. They're just going to be chilled out. And then you give them a treat if they go into a settle, and then you do that for a few dozen times, and then you wait for a moment when they're maybe 5% away from totally settled, and then you work it up over the course of weeks and months.
Mm.
And then the desensitization part is when you start introducing the thing that was setting them off in the first place, but at a very low intensity. For instance, you can get recordings of cars, or you can get, this is often used with dogs with noise phobias, or July 4th, or thunderstorms, that you can get recordings of thunderstorms, but you, after you have taught to settle under a non demanding circumstances, you then introduce a recording of a thunderstorm with the volume turned way low so it's barely audible, and then they go into a settle. You slowly, over the course of weeks and weeks, turn up that volume so that they're not any longer worried by at least the sound that they're hearing. So that's for noise phobia. For the cars on the road, what you need to do is just introduce them first to a road that does not have cars and just a sidewalk and get them comfortable with the sidewalk. Then you recruit someone that will drive the car at your signal slowly when you're walking on a road that you know there won't be any other cars or unlikely. And then you put them into a settle for that slow, silent car. And then you work that up. And then you literally step, baby step by baby step, get them reacclimated to the sound and the sight and the feeling, because it's probably a vibration too, of the cars going by. And so it takes a lot of work. But since this is just a recent thing that happened, it may not take that much undoing to get this out of the dog system.
All right, this one is from Chris in Cornwall on Hudson. This came earlier as well. And then we'll get to the phones at 800-348-2551. Hello, Dr. Scharf, writes Chris. My 17-year-old Tabby had routine blood work done last week. All her blood cell counts were normal, but she showed a very high reticulocyte count. My vet was unable to explain what this meant, so I researched online and found that this could indicate anemia. My kitty has suddenly developed labored breathing in the last few days. I have three questions. One, does she have anemia? Two, could the anemia be causing her labored breathing? Three, can the anemia be treated? And that's from Chris in Cornwall on Hudson.
Great question. A big question, Chris. The reticulocytes are immature red blood cells. So when we are anemic, which means we don't have enough red blood cells, then the bone marrow, if it's behaving correctly, is going to pump out immature red blood cells. That's what the reticulocytes are. Now, if you want a what is called regenerative response, your complete blood count will show that you're pumping out more reticulocytes than you would be normally, which means something like 100,000 per something or other. Forget the units. Anyway, as opposed to 5,000 or 10,000, which an non-anemic dog or cat would have. So if there are reticulocytes, then it is a question, is the animal anemic? If that cat's anemic, then by all means, the reticulocytes that are high is an appropriate response. It means the bone marrow is working. So, Chris, there are three things that cause anemia in an animal, and maybe people too, I don't know. One is blood loss. Blood loss would cause a high reticulocyte count. The bone marrow is working fine. The second thing is an autoimmune disorder, an immune-mediated disorder, in which the cat thinks that its own red blood cells are foreign and attacks them. That, too, would produce a high reticulocyte count because the bone marrow is still functioning correctly. The third thing, and the last thing that'll cause an anemia, is when the bone marrow is not responding correctly, and that's usually a cancer or some kind of chemotherapy or a heavy-duty drug, in which case you will have a non-regenerative anemia, and those are much harder to deal with. So I'm assuming that the animal has an anemia, but that's an easy thing to find out. It's called either a packed cell volume or PCV or an hematocrit, or what the inside people call a crit. And you want that in a cat to be at least, I don't know, 24 to 25% minimum. Between 24 and 45% is a normal range for a cat. So that's an easy thing to find out.
Okay.
Most vet hospitals could do it in-house, and you need to know if there's an anemia. If there's no anemia, but an elevated reticulocyte count, that's a puzzle. I've seen it a few times. It is not likely significant, but I'm not sure what a reticulocyte number being high in the absence of anemia would signify.
Okay. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. Let's take a break and then we'll get to the phones. 800-348-2551. Pets and Vets today. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Fox Pop on WAMC, Pets and Vets, Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551, the number. Dr. Ron Scharf is here to answer your questions, and let's get right to the phones. And Susan in South Egremont. Susan, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Scharf. Thank you for taking the call.
Hi, Susan.
This is another geriatric question. My 17-year-old cat is experiencing constipation. And rather than going with any kind of more formal medical traditions, I've been using the pumpkin with coconut oil. And that has been working, but it seems to not be working quite as well. We're getting little lumpies, and then periodically there's an explosion. I can't figure out how to describe that politely. I'm just wondering what would be an appropriate dietary method for easing her through everything she eats.
Okay. So pumpkin is very commonly used, Susan. It is very popular. The coconut oil I'm less familiar with, I would imagine, because it's an oil. Oils often can cause a gloppier poop. The pumpkin, because it has all that fiber, will bulk the cat up and will make the stools less solid, less clumpy. And the trick is to titrate it so that it's just loose enough to prevent the constipation without becoming overly. So if you want to,
precisely.
If you want to avoid drugs, I mean, drugs are effective. But I could see if you could do it with either a natural substance or an over-the-counter substance, that would be good. I mean, Colace or DSS is an over-the-counter product that we could use in animals. It's not a drug per se, but it probably functions similarly to the oil part. Mineral oil also is something that could make someone gloppy, but it's messy. So a polite way for you to say explosive, lumpies with explosion, would be there are other ways to say it, but I get the picture very
well. I think we all get the picture, frankly.
Yeah. So I would just try to, by titrate, Susan, I mean, just try experimenting with the amount of pumpkin or pumpkin with coconut oil that you use.
Okay.
Make a little less, make a little more, see what works.
But you also think mineral oil, because I had just recently gotten some cod liver oil because of the fish, and that seems to be what she prefers over chicken. So it was like, but that doesn't seem to be winning her heart. Whereas mineral oil has no flavors in it.
Yes. So the mineral oil is fine, but you may run into the messy problem.
So it's just eat it and watch.
Huh. Well, eat it, watch, write something down on a piece of paper, and then modify it the next time. Because
yes,
you could
exactly.
make it so that it's you could dial it back or dial it forward to depending upon what kind of job it's doing for the cat. I once actually, sometimes, Susan, it's a little, not totally off topic, but cats can get something called obstipation. Now, that's way worse. That's constipation to the nth degree, where there's a nerve problem to the colon, and they get so backed up. Mm. And I think a couple times had some success with acupuncture getting cats going again. So there's a way to not use anything orally. But you need to go several times if it's going to work. And that might be an option, too, something holistic.
How do you feel about acupuncture, kitty cat?
Oh.
Don't ask her.
All right. Thanks. Hey, Susan, thanks a lot for the call.
Good luck, Susan.
Let's go on over to Ellen in Catskill. Ellen, you're on.
Thank you. My neighbor's Cochon de Tourier, about 5 years old, went catatonic or rigid for a little while, and I took him for a walk the next morning, and he was fine. He acted normal. This happened once before, and we rushed him to a vet who did a fast exam and found nothing wrong. Have you any advice?
Well, I would take some blood, Ellen, just to make sure that there are no things internally that will show up on a blood test. For instance, high calcium due to whatever. Or a low blood sugar due to whatever. There are many things that can cause those things. The high calcium is kind of an interesting thing because there was just a few months ago a problem with one of the ingredient companies that the Hill's company uses, and too much vitamin D was going into the foods, and animals were getting hypercalcemic. Whether or not they were having these catatonic episodes, I doubt. There are less severe ways of showing a hypercalcemia. But hypercalcemia, some of the rat poisoning is a product that interferes with calcium and phosphorus, and that could cause funny stuff to happen. Now, if it's in the brain, if there's something going on in the brain, it won't show up in the blood work, but the blood work will serve to rule out certain things like the calcium or the glucose or you know, sometimes liver problems. If the liver's not doing its job, filtering the toxins from the system, dogs can act funny because of that. So there are various possibilities. Blood work would be the first thing to do, Ellen.
Okay, Ellen, thank you for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf, our guest today on Pets and Vets. Lori in Queensbury. Lori, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling in regards to my cat. He is 17 months old. He's a blue Russian Siamese mix. The problem with Satchel is he's very overweight, and I'm trying to put him on a diet. You know, we're working on that.
Yeah.
But something happened last week that never happened before. He went number two twice outside his... I have two litter boxes here in my home for him. Twice. And I noticed that he's also had a lot of urine in his litter box, too. And he's sleeping a lot. And I'm wondering what could possibly be going on with him.
You said that this cat, Lori, is 17 months old?
Yes.
So,
I'm really, really concerned about him. He's so overweight. What I feed him, hopefully I'm at liberty to say, is the Iams Indoor Weight and Hairball Formula, Preventive Health. But it doesn't seem to be helping him lose weight. And he's so overweight. People tell me how big he is. I did take him to the vet last month. He tested negative for diabetes.
Good. Okay. So the possibility exists, Lori, that because he's drinking so much. He's got to be drinking so much if he's peeing that much. What goes out must have come in. And if he's drinking excessively, then he is what we call in the industry PUPD, polyuric polydipsic, meaning peeing too much, drinking too much. And it's good that it's not diabetes, but it could be other things that are causing it. It could be kidneys. It could be Cushing's disease. Cushing's disease is an endocrine problem like diabetes that would cause someone to drink a lot and pee a lot and be overweight, Okay? You don't see too many cats with Cushing's. It's much more of a dog thing, but it is possible. So Cushing's may not show up on a regular complete blood count and blood chemistry, so you would have to do another test for that. But I would wonder, Lori, if he's pooping outside the box because cats are fastidious, and if he's peeing a lot, then the box is not up to his standards, his fastidious standards of cleanliness, or he could be too fat to get over the wall of the litter box.
Oh, boy.
He could be lumbering and saying, screw this, I'm going to do it over there because I don't have to make this big step. So what you want to do in that circumstance is just get a litter box with a lower wall. See if you can get
Bingo.
In. Yeah. But the water is a big concern, Lori. I would say it's good to not be diabetic, but there are other things that you want to rule out because that could be a situation. And it's very unusual in a 17-month-old cat to be drinking a lot, to be getting
saying,
those kinds of things. Yeah, that's not usual. And the sleeping a lot, that could be just because of the weight. You know, when you're overweight, you're sluggish. And so most all of what you're saying is due to the weight. Except for the drinking too much and peeing too much. So I don't think that that's, unless it affected the liver in a way that caused that. That's a possibility. An obese cat can get a liver disease, and once in a while, a liver disease can cause them to drink too much and pee too much.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Lori.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking my call, and I will be calling my vet very shortly.
Good
thank
luck,
you very
Lori.
Much.
Thanks
You're
a lot
welcome.
For the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest today on Pets and Vets. Tim in Ballston Spa. Tim.
Yes, my granddaughter is thinking about moving out to San Diego, and at the same time, she's thinking about getting herself a hairless Egyptian cat. And I'm leery of the breed just because inbreeding, health problems, et cetera. What do you got to say?
Like, what I got to say, Tim, is that I have very little experience with hairless cats. I've had some, but I can't speak to them generally about what that breed is prone to because you're right about the inbreeding, Tim. And a lot of purebred animals, dogs and cats, come with a lot of baggage genetically because at the same time you're selecting for those qualities and characteristics that you want, they got a lot of bad baggage coming with them.
Yeah.
So what particular bad genetic baggage the Egyptian hairless cat comes with, I don't know. I'd imagine they get cold easy, but in San Diego, it's
perfect
not an
weather,
issue. Yeah, it's not an issue. I would hit the books, Tim. Personally, there's nothing that stands out in my memory as having heard ever before about watch out for Egyptian hairless cats because they get so-and-so. I don't know that they
get... Do you see a lot of them, Doc?
No, I see very few.
Tim, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Why is your granddaughter deciding on a hairless cat? Is it an allergy thing?
No, she just likes it, and she is a person who succeeds in doing most everything she wants to do.
So there's really no talking her out of it then, right?
No. Oh. Well, I'm hoping to.
All right. Well, if you fail, please call us back and let us know how it's going.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551, the number. It's Pets and Vets today with Dr. Ron Scharf. And Suzanne in Mount Tremper is on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I've got a 14-year-old cat who generally is in great shape. He's male, never been overweight or anything like that. Lovely personality. We moved upstate New York from downstate, and we started, there were like lots of bugs around here. So I decided to try the Seresto collar, which has a very powerful, pesticide in it, I guess. And after a period of time, I mean, I can't say that this was definitely, caused by this, but after a period of time, I started noticing he didn't seem quite right. His breathing was a bit labored. He just didn't look as good. He would develop like this interesting, we'd pick him up and he'd be like shaking. And I took him to the vet, and he wound up having pancreatitis. We, you know, got that all taken care of. And then a couple of weeks later, and this he still has his collar on. The collar had been on probably for about 4, 5, 6 months at this point. A friend of mine came running down to me. She was upstairs and said, Rascal's having a seizure. And I went up there, and he was having the big tonic-clonic seizure, you know, just huge grand mal seizure. It probably went on for 4 or 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Took him quite a while to recover from it, you know, like even like the next day, the day after. I did take him to the vet. The first thing he did was he snipped off the Seresto collar. Rascal, now, of course, I'm not around Rascal all the time, but I do work from home. He hasn't had anything since then. Have you heard about animals getting, having such a powerful reaction to these medicines? I'm not sure if it was this cat, Rascal, but when I first started giving him it might have been him, the topical stuff on the back of the neck many years ago, I just remember like smelling it and then sort of feeling like he didn't seem normal for a couple of days. I mean, I think it was him. I've had a few cats in my life. Okay. But is there such a thing? I Googled it, did not see anything about cats. I thought I saw something about maybe dogs have gotten affected in a weird way. But he doesn't seem to have that anymore.
All right, so Doc, anyway, what do you think?
So, Suzanne, cats are notorious for being sensitive to pesticides. They have livers, and the livers are missing a real important enzyme mechanism, which prevents them from being able to break down certain substances. It's called the P450 cytochrome, I think. Anyway, they are notorious for responding poorly to many pesticides. Now, specifically as far as Seresto, I have not heard of many cats having that bad reaction, but there's always some, okay? And when these products get their approval from the FDA, now I'm not even sure whether or not Seresto is an FDA-approved product because pesticides are EPA-regulated, so I'm not sure about that. But if they were to get an FDA, then that FDA product will say, well, we've looked at 1,000 cats and 2 of them showed seizures or neurological problems, and that goes on the label, but it's not enough to not approve the product. So there's always going to be some reactions. I have not, though, heard that Seresto had more a higher incidence of neurological problems or seizures compared to any other pesticide that's approved for cats. But like I said, if it's an EPA approval, then they don't look into it with the rigor that FDA does.
Okay.
And since it's not a food and since it's not ingested, it could very well be an EPA in which it's a less stringent approval process.
All right, Suzanne, thank you for the call. Of course, the correlation of the timing of things doesn't necessarily mean that the collar was the cause.
Yeah, a lot of people, that's a very good point, Ray, that a lot of people just jump to the conclusion that it was X that caused whatever problem Y that happened. But it's just an anecdotal thing that in that one person or 10 people's experience, such and such happened. But you really can't say stuff like that without actually looking into a double-blind, placebo-controlled study in which you're comparing a population that gets it and a population that doesn't get it. That way, you could figure out statistically whether or not it's a statistically significant incidence, in which case, if you're seeing 10% of animals having a bad reaction, or people for that matter, then you're thinking that's not safe enough for the general public.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's, you know, a 0.5% or something, then maybe it's an acceptable potential evil.
All right, let's go over to Ann in Suffield. Ann, you're on.
Hi. I have 2 cats, a mother cat, young, and her kitten. The kitten's now about 7 months old, and the mother cat, we're not sure of her age because I adopted them. And when I got them last fall, the kitten was obviously tiny at 2 months old, and the mama cat was nice and slender. I've been feeding them kitten chow to the kind of the lowest common denominator, the need of the kitten. But the mother cat's been getting chubbier and chubbier. I'm not really in a position to feed them separately. We have two dogs also that we need to keep away yeah. from their food. And I've been feeding the dry, I've been feeding a combination. At this point, they're up to one can of moist in the morning and one can in the afternoon, evening, and free choice dry. So I want to take away the dry, but nobody can give me an idea of the volume that I should be giving to these two cats that will be adequate for the kitten.
Okay.
And keep the mother's weight down before it becomes a real issue.
All right, so this is one that should be fairly easy to answer, Doc, right?
Yeah, this is a great question, Ann. And you're coming up, you're hitting up against a problem that's very common in people with multiple cat households, that there's always going to be some animals that are more interested in food than others. And the ones that are more interested get overweight, and then when you try to cut them back, it doesn't happen because the one that's more interested just takes the food from the cat that's less interested, and then maybe the small cat gets smaller, but the big cat doesn't
right.
get smaller.
Well, and I'm feeling that because of the adoption, the mama, well, even though she was young, she must have been feral, so she probably had food issues. So, definitely...
Sure. She vowed to never go hungry
food.
Again. So, a simple yes. thing to do is just to cut out the dry food and give them, you said, you know, I'm not sure what you mean by that. You're not in a position to feed them separately. But what I would recommend, maybe you would be able, and to give them 20 mm-hmm. minutes with their canned food, and then you take it away. Okay. And you give them
okay.
maybe a couple of opportunities a day or three opportunities, whatever it is. And that way you can control the amount of food that each one's getting. And it's not the case that cats need to graze all day long. Okay, if you think of cats in the
okay.
wild, they might have nothing for days, and then they, you know, track down some kind of prey,
yeah.
and they gorge out, and they don't have anything for days after that. So cats don't need to graze,
okay.
and usually, if you let them graze,
they will
eat to satiety. They do not eat to good health.
All right,
they eat
so
to satiety.
Pull away the dry food completely.
Yes, I totally yep. agree with that, because I'll tell you one thing. The only one thing, Ann, that dry food's better about than canned food is the convenience. That's it.
Doctor,
every other way, canned food is better.
Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. It's Pets and Vets. We'll take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. T-Bone Walker here on Vox Pop. It's Pets and Vets today. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. 800-348-2551. You did a little research on the Egyptian hairless, eh?
Well, I did come up with something that I did not know that as a genetic thing to watch out for. The previous caller, Tim, was warning about his granddaughter moving to San Diego
yeah.
with Egyptian hairless. Myoclonus, so that's a very unusual, very rare disease in which the muscles don't act right. And there could be an involuntary rhythmic contraction of a portions of a muscle or entire muscle or groups of muscles.
Oh, boy.
It could be... Every second, there could be another contraction. Have I ever seen this ever in my career? No, let alone in an Egyptian hairless. But they are one of the breeds. Most of the other ones that are predisposed to that are dogs,
uh-huh.
labs, and a few other breeds. So there's one possibility,
okay.
but it's a bad arguing point for Tim to convince his granddaughter to not go to San Diego with an Egyptian hairless cat, because it's very unlikely that that's going to happen.
All right, back to the phones we go. And Ruth in Monterey Bass. Ruth, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And Ray, it's always good to hear you and your music.
Well, thank you.
Uh-huh. Welcome.
Hear, hear.
Pardon me, can you hear me okay?
Oh, yes, he can. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. My two pugs have been missing for 4 months.
Oh.
And I have done everything I know of at this point, which includes hundreds of Facebook pages, hundreds of vets, animal control officers, postcards to every mail recipient in my town, and, of course, posters and flyers.
Yikes.
And, of course, I'm calling you because I don't have any sign of the dogs. There have been no sightings, nothing at all. And I'm wondering if you could make any suggestions for any other ways to search for my girls.
Well, certainly you just mentioned it over a seven-state region. But, I mean, is this a common thing for two dogs to go missing like that?
No.
It sounds like foul play almost.
No, yeah. I don't know, but they're pugs. They got out through a hole in the fence. There was a nor'easter that day in October, and it was raining and 50-mile-an-hour winds, and they vanished immediately. I could not find them anywhere. I walked for hours.
You checked all the shelters.
You know what? I've been all over the shelters, too. And
what about LostDog.com? Sorry to interrupt you. I think that there is a website.
I don't want to keep talking.
I think there's a website called LostDog.com or something like that.
Well, you better search it. You never know what you come up with if you type in a URL. But you think there is a website that...
I would Google LostDog and see if they come up with a website that might allow you to publicize it. I think the Facebook post that you get as many friends that you can to share is good, or boost it. You know, I don't know if I have a business page, Facebook, that it can be boosted. So maybe your vet's got a Facebook page and you could ask them to put it out and boost it and give them the money, you know, offer to pay.
I'll tell you what, Ruth,
$50 or something.
You know, if you wouldn't mind, you could always email our producer, Jim Lavoulis. Just send it to voxpop@wamc.org. And then we'll have your email address. And if anyone contacts the show, we will we will get you in, you know, in contact with that person.
Oh, fantastic!
It's a good time. Without trying to make you feel better, it's a good time to give a plug to chipping your animal. You know, putting these chips that if they do get found, then yes, either an animal control or a shelter. No, her dogs aren't.
No, her dogs are.
Yes,
they are chipped.
They are microchipped, but
that good for you.
I don't think they were stolen, but I think someone might have picked them up and gotten attached to them.
Oh, well, yeah, that could be.
So
and in which
case,
they
have to be scanned.
They
to
may
be
not
chipped,
want to be chipped. They may not want to be scanned because if they got attached to them,
right?
You're right. I mean, that's a sticky
Well, Ruth,
thing.
If we hear anything, we will certainly let you know. Just drop us an email. Thank you for the call. Number here is 800-348-2551. Nancy in Wilton. Nancy, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a cat that's a small boned. We called her Little One when we got her. She was a feral, 7 months old. And then she got fat almost immediately. And I never had a cat. You know, if I put down food that they would just constantly eat, and that's what she did. Anyway, she's about 7 years old now. Started limping. I thought maybe she strained herself. I waited a bit, and she didn't get better. Took her to the vet. And the vet on duty said she has hypercalcemia. And that she gave me this huge typed-up thing on it. And there's a myriad of causes, including that somewhere in her bone marrow she's hiding, feeling leukemia, and now it's coming out, but it's not contagious, or all kinds of stuff. But that there's only one test. She has to do a fasting for 12 hours, and then it has to be sent away to Michigan, and it costs about $300-$400. You know anything about? I have never heard of hypercalcemia.
Yeah, so we had just mentioned that to a previous caller about why her neighbor's dogs were having, or one of them was having catatonic episodes. So hypercalcemia can be caused by many things, Nancy. But the test I'm thinking that you were talking about is what's called an ionized calcium and parathyroid hormone assay, meaning the active form of calcium is in its ionized state, and so that is giving more information about just the total body concentration of calcium in the bloodstream. And the PTH, the parathyroid hormone, is to tell you whether or not there is a hyperparathyroid issue. If there is a hyperparathyroid issue, it means the calcium and the phosphorus too will be out of whack. And the two things that cause hyperparathyroidism are kidney disease, number one, and nutritional. So there's a nutritional secondary hyperparathyroidism as well as a renal. If it was kidney, then you'd likely be seeing that cat drinking a lot and peeing a lot. And if the cat's
not... And she's not.
And she's not. So I'm thinking it's a nutritional thing and that there is too much... What kind of food did you say that this cat was on?
She is grain-free dry, and I can force her to eat wet food, high-quality wet food. Everybody else in the house eats it, except for her. She will complain and complain, and she'll actually go a couple of days without eating.
What company, where is this, what's it called? What company makes this grain-free dry, Nancy?
I think, hold on.
Okay, if you don't know,
Diamond?
I'm going to say that you change the food.
Really?
Change it to a reputable company. I'm thinking that from the limited data that I have, I mean, I haven't looked at the cat, I haven't looked at any blood work, that I would say that it's nutritional. If the kidneys are working fine, has a blood test been done? I mean, if you know that the calcium's high, then you would know that
the
kidneys...
They did a whole workup on her.
So the kidney numbers are normal then, I would imagine, or else
the
vet would have mentioned
it. Yeah, she said the thing that was wrong was the elevated calcium,
okay.
Odd and...
Okay, so you can get...
Diamond Naturals is the cat food.
You can get a hypercalcemia from cancer. It's called a paraneoplastic syndrome. And so some animals with cancers of various types, not just one kind, can get a hypercalcemia. So it's not out of the question to have a cancer going on, a paraneoplastic syndrome. But I would look at the food also. It's one of those two.
Okay.
And if you could do the iodized calcium parathyroid hormone at Michigan, fine. If you can't, you can't. But I would switch the food to a reputable breed. I'm not saying Diamond's not reputable. I just don't know them.
Okay.
I don't know if it's got the right mix of calcium and phosphorus. They need to be in the right ratio as well as the right amount. So I'd look at the food. And then you got to wonder, do you want to do an ultrasound by a radiologist to do a cancer hunt?
I mean,
that's a possibility, too.
Nancy, thanks a lot for the call. Ron Scharf is our guest today on the show. Jillian in Hurley. Jillian, you're on.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
All right. You had another caller asking about her overweight cat going outside the litter box. We have a similar situation. Our cat, Mary, we adopted her from the shelter. She was probably 19 pounds when we adopted her. She's now 17 pounds, and we give her food, a certain amount morning and evening. Then we take the plates away so she can't snack on it. So it kind of seems like we've got that part under control.
Cool.
Her litter box is downstairs, and we've modified it to a low litter box. She can climb in and out easily, we think. We try to keep it clean. It's in the center of the basement so she can walk around it. Now, she's still going outside the box, just poopy outside the box from time to time. The other issue, I'm just trying to give you the full picture here. The other issue is we recently had a child. The baby's 15 months old now, and I feel like the pooping outside the box started when we had the baby. We've gradually been trying to work on their relationship, and I feel like it's gotten a lot better. She lets the baby pet her now, and so that's kind of, I think, the full picture there. We give her wet food in the morning, dry food in the evening. Just trying to get her to poop in the box. It's not happening.
All right.
If it's due to the kid, then you're doing the right thing to have your 15-month-old be on better terms with...
Would that be common for a cat to react to a child in that fashion?
No.
No.
No, it's not. Now, was this cat getting a whole lot of attention, Jillian, before your baby came along?
Yes, definitely.
And now she's not getting as much attention?
Yes, that's
so
true.
So, yeah, it could be a lack of attention, but that's more of a dog thing. In my mind, the dogs are much more sensitive to getting less attention than a cat. Cats are, I don't know, there are a lot of them much more standoffish than dogs in general. But if you can give the cat more attention, that would be covering that base, number one. Number two is that the low litter box is great. Now, the poops that are going outside the litter box are not loose or diarrhea or anything like that. Have you made any changes in the litter?
My husband buys it, and I think he sort of rotates between a couple of the Arm & Hammer brands. I don't think he's really tracked that as far as has he always used the same one, or has he switched to, like, you know, Double Duty or Heavy Duty or Three Cat or whatever.
You want to try different litters is what I would recommend, Jillian. That's another base to cover. A lot of cats don't like certain litters. Either they have a scent, which they don't like. You know, we like it because it covers the bad smell. But the cats don't like to be, a lot of cats don't like to be doing their number two business in a perfumed area. A lot of cats don't like the clay litter. You know, it's got this dust in the air, the clay dust in the air. That's not good. Most people agree that the clumping litter is the best without a scent in it. And then you want to clean it as much as possible. And make sure that the cat, let's see, it's 17 pounds now. I mean, you have a low litter box, but that doesn't mean the cat doesn't have, say, some arthritic joint, you know? So maybe try a trial course for a week or two there is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory that's labeled for use in cats called Onsior, just to see if it's an arthritis possibility. So you're covering three bases there between changing litter, trying different litters, and cleaning it as often as possible, trying the Onsior, O-N-S-I-O-R, right. There's a good start for trying to get that, and then getting the cat to not be overweight. There are certain calories that you could feed it and then cut her off. It's trouble because sometimes it's a battle of wills, you know, the cats that are used to getting what they want and then all of a sudden are being restricted have ways of expressing their displeasure. So,
all right,
you know. That's where to start.
Let's try to get one more in here. We only have about a minute or a minute and a half. Let's go to Leonard in LaGrange. Leonard, you're on. You have about a minute, sir.
Yes. I've got a parrot that I bought from birth, this young parrot.
Yes.
And I feed it a fish, a gefilte fish, a small a bit of gefilte fish, because parrots like fish.
Makes sense, yeah,
but
right.
Every time I put the cover on my parrot, whose name is Jazbo, she sings My Yiddish Mama.
Very interesting.
And I just don't know how to handle Jazbo.
Yeah, well, what do you think?
I love the song, mind you. I don't mind it. My Yiddish Mama.
You see? Leonard, we appreciate the call very much, and it's a perfect way to end the program. You know, it's always good to hear from Leonard in LaGrange. Well, Doc, how do people find out more about the Niskayuna Animal Hospital?
That is great. So we have a phone number. We have a website. The phone number is 518-785-9731. The website's Animal Hospital Niskayuna. .com. We have a Facebook page. You should really check it out. The Animal Hospital of Niskayuna has a Facebook page, and there's a lot of great animals on there, a lot of great pictures, and it's fun to look at. And, come along, make a comment, do a like, and enjoy it.
Well, that's great. Thanks for being here, and thank you for enjoying the madness on this program. Support comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, celebrating 30 years of protecting the land that protects the lake, offering more than 35 miles of trails for hiking, birding, and outdoor exploration, lglc.org. Nine Pin Cider Works, Albany, featuring hard cider made from local apples, now serving pizza, light fare, beer, wine, and spirits in the tasting room. Open Tuesday through Sunday, ninepincider.com. At Mass Mocha, North Adams, Massachusetts, presenting Punch Brothers on March 16th and High Mud Comedy Fest with Judah Friedlander and Michelle Boto, March 29th and 30th, massmocha.org. Thanks again to Ron Char for being here. Thank you for listening. And to Leonard from LaGrange for the wonderful Yiddish song. Thanks to Zach, our engineer. And your phones are answered by Amber Sickles and Dina Salzman. Our producer is Jimmy the Hammer Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Bob Berman makes a studio landing at 2 p.m. Right now, stand by for news.